Today, youth sports is a booming business, but it's not benefiting kids or even making them better athletes necessarily. Sports-related injuries are on the rise, the pressure on kids to perform and achieve is immense, and some adults are making a mint, catering to the growing demand for raising your very own Tiger Woods. That's the case, as laid out by our guest this morning, the author of the book Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Hurts Our Kids. Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mark Hyman is our guest this morning. His book is a critique of the youth sports culture in America. You can join us this morning and tell us what you think. Are you a parent who thinks sports have become too much too soon for our kids? Or is all the emphasis just good training for the body, mind, and maybe the real world? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us your email at talk@WPR.org. And Mark Hyman, so glad you could join us this hour.
Thank you. Thank you, Veronica. Good to be with you.
Well, your book was, it was a riveting read. In part, there are so many stories in this book about children who have been affected by what you're talking about here. Some of these children and families have been kind of scarred, either physically or mentally, by the youth sports in this country. And your own family has one of these stories. Would you like to start by telling us about your son, Ben?
Sure. This is, I guess you could probably tell a big part of the reason I wrote the book. I actually have two sons. I have a son, Ben, who's 20, and a son, Eli, who's 18. And my older son was a very avid player from very early on, and with my encouragement.
A baseball player, right?
And, you know, I had him out in the front yard, you know, in the middle of December taking batting practice when he was 18 months old. he entered, you know, organized baseball. I played t-ball, and I was his coach. And when he reached, well, I guess I should say that he was a very good player and a very good pitcher. And as coach of the teams that he played on, I was often taking advantage of that. So if the league rules permitted him to pitch three innings in each game, he was pitching three innings because we were likely to be more successful when he was doing that. And when he got to be 12 or 13, he started having arm problems that I'm convinced were related to the fact that he was doing too much, and I was kind of enabling that. And by the time he got to high school, he had a very serious elbow injury and ended up having Tommy John surgery, which is an operation where the ligament in the elbow ruptures and is replaced by a tendon from the opposite wrist.
Hmm.
So, so I write quite a bit in the book about you know, my role in enabling that, and I had quite a bit of angst about it.
Well, you write about it with a lot of regret, and I guess sort of the telling thing about that is you're someone, you know, you're a journalist, you had been aware of these sports-related injuries, but there's something about parents, something that happens sometimes when their kids get involved in sports that takes really good parents, good people, and sort of sees them doing things that they wouldn't normally do, things that push their kids too far. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I mean, it's very disarming to have a son or a daughter who has sports talent, you know, and you're watching from the sideline and you know, you see yourself, you're projecting yourself, and, you know, you want your child to succeed, certainly on the field, and it can blind you in ways that really shock and surprise you as a parent. And I consider myself to be a very protective parent. You know, I'd be the first one to, you know, hand my son a sweater, you know, as he was walking out the door. Yet in this context, it's very different. It's very hard to see the risks and the dangers.
You've said that adults are ruining youth sports for kids. Can you sort of lay out what you see as the chief problems in youth sports today?
Sure. You know, this book, you know, clearly has a point of view. And basically, I think what I'm saying is that sports for kids have become more about our ambitions for our children and less about allowing kids to be kids. And I think that's kind of the fundamental problem. I mean, there are about 35 million kids playing sports in the U.S. today. Little League Baseball, about 2.6 million, and Pop Warner Football, maybe 300,000. And in our current kind of sports culture, kids are getting started so much earlier than they ever have before. There's a lot of pressure for them to start early. You know, when I was a kid, you couldn't start playing Little League until you were 9 years old. If your father was the coach, you played when you were eight, but the age of entry was about nine. Now it's typical for kids to be starting when they're four or five, and there's a national organization called Little Kickers that begins for kids when they're under 2 years old.
And you talk about a woman who's got a DVD series for babies, Baby Athlete or something.
Yeah, it's called athleticbaby.com. And I think as parents, we all share this concern that our kids are going to fall behind somehow if we don't get them started at a very early age. And we don't want them to be disadvantaged in that way. And we also want to identify that sports talent. You know, there's kind of a currency in having a child that has a particular sports talent, and you want to nurture that. And you want to, you know, put your child in a position where they're going to be able to succeed in sports. And you know, if the kid next door is playing on an organized team at age three and your child isn't, you know, you can feel like your child is falling behind.
And speaking of Little League, which you brought up a little bit ago here, that is that's actually covered. The World Series Little League is on ESPN now,
yes.
Which I guess is sort of cute, sort of like seeing a spelling bee. But on the other hand, I mean, adults have trouble dealing with, you know, pressure. What is it going to do to a kid, that kind of pressure and that kind of scrutiny?
Well, I write a lot about the Little League World Series. And one of the reasons is that I have kind of a long and complicated relationship with the Little League World Series. When I was a child living in New Jersey, my dad would take us to the Little League World Series every year, and this goes back to the mid-60s. So we loved the Little League World Series as children, and I know my dad loved it. And it was just a wonderful entertainment event. And I viewed it in that context for a very long time. Until in the 80s, as a journalist, I started looking at it again and reevaluating the Little League World Series. Now it's become a huge entertainment event. Every Little League World Series game that's played in Williamsport each year is on national television. And the audience is huge. I mean, some of the Little League World Series games draw ratings that exceed, for instance, the National Hockey League playoff games.
Wow.
So people really, you know, appreciate and are drawn to this event. But the question is, you know, should sports for kids be an entertainment vehicle? Is that appropriate? And what is the price that kids pay for that?
Well, what is the price as you see it?
Well, you know, I've talked to a number of psychologists and psychiatrists about this, and I have yet to find one that thinks it's a good idea for an 11-year-old kid to be playing baseball with the potential for failing on national TV. I had one very prominent psychologist compare it to a little boy wearing a man's suit, and I thought that was very apt. Why are we putting kids in this position? It seems like it's more to meet our needs, our emotional needs, than it is in their developmental interest.
Well, also to make money off of it.
Well, that's true. The Little League Baseball Incorporated, much of its revenue is derived from the Little League World Series. I mean, there are many, you know, dozens of corporate sponsors that sign up with Little League. And the reason they do that is largely because of the exposure that they get at the Little League World Series. And Little League Baseball, in turn, takes the revenue. You know, it relies on the revenue that it gets from the Little League World Series to run its program each year. So it's kind of become embedded in the whole Little League culture. They really rely on the Little League World Series to fund their programs the rest of the year.
What do you think a better model for youth sports would look like? Because right now, what we're talking about is pretty much the standard. There is a lot of pressure. Kids compete sometimes with the goal of being an Olympian or a college player from the time they're in grade school. But what in your world, if things were better, what would that look like, a youth sports program for kids?
Well, there are all sorts of proposals, and I discuss some of them in the book. I mean, for instance, there are people who believe that a big part of the solution would be mandatory training for volunteer coaches. And that might look like, a national program where coaches would get training on, child development and how to relate better to kids, how not to pressure kids. But the problem is that there is no central governing body for youth sports in the United States. So there's really no one in a position or no organization in a position to create that kind of oversight. So these problems are intractable, and they've been going on for a very long time. I mean, my notion is that we have to kind of have some moment of enlightenment. I mean, and I liken it to the debate about cigarette smoking. 15 years ago, there seemed to be a tipping point where people's attitudes towards smoking cigarettes changed in the United States. And from that point, people, the interest and, people smoking, that kind of went away. And it's diminished greatly over that time. And I think we need to reach that point with youth sports. We have, as a culture, we have to kind of have this national debate about what is it exactly that we want for our kids from sports. And I think that's got to be the starting point. And until we have that debate in an honest way, I don't really see change coming.
Hmm. And yet there are so many stories in your book. Maybe it's worth telling a couple of them. I guess one that stuck with me from the book is a couple of parents who brought their son in. He had been a football player, and he had sustained an internal injury. And they were asking the doctor, whether the son could play again. You want to tell us that story?
Sure. I did a lot of reporting in the book in talking to physicians and orthopedic surgeons, pediatric specialists, about families that they've seen with, sports-related injuries. And the story you're referring to was told to me by a woman named Mary Rain, who works with a pediatrician in just outside of New York City. And the family came in with a son who had suffered a damaged spleen in a football game. And the physician said to the family, "This is a very serious injury, and if the child plays again, he risks, it's really a life-threatening situation if he gets hit in the spleen again." And the parents, the child was in the room with the parents. And the parents' reaction was to say to the physician, "Well, isn't there something we can do to get him back on the field? Can we put, some extra padding around his spleen? Is there, some way that we can get him back on the field?" Instead of, "Gosh, I'm so glad we're here and got this advice so that we're not going to put him at risk again." And I heard stories like this over and over, where parents would go to physicians for treatment of a child's sports injury, and their immediate reaction was to want to know, how can we get this, my child back on the field, rather than I'm concerned about the child, and how can we keep the child safe?
It's hard to know how to respond to that. I mean, the kid's life was at stake, and they wanted to put padding on them and send him back out there. It's just, and you know that these parents, maybe if they were asked, they'd say, "Well, this is what he wants. He wants to play football." And another telling thing that comes up in your book again and again is that these doctors and surgeons who meet with these kids, they find that when the kids finally get a chance to be away from the parents, they'll sort of reveal that, they don't really want to go through the surgery to play again because they want to be done.
That's a very interesting dynamic in all of this, that the kids oftentimes are ready to stop playing sports before the parents are ready for them to stop playing. And there's several stories in the book like that. It's very difficult for the physicians because they don't want to do. You know, in one case that I talk about in the book, the kid comes to see the physician and actually needs surgery on his arm if he's going to return to playing. And the physician doesn't want to do the surgery if the child isn't really interested in playing anymore. But it's the parents who are really motivated to keep the kid on the field. So it's pretty sad in a way.
What generally happens in those cases? Do the parents force through the surgery, or do the kids finally get the out that they're looking for?
Well, a lot of kids burn out. And I mean, maybe this is a good time to talk about the kind of connect the dots and talk about what the consequences of this kind of, over investment on the part of parents has on kids. And there are really two outcomes. One is that kids drop out of sports, and that is happening at a pretty amazing rate. The peak age for participation in team sports for kids is age 11, which I think is remarkably young. After that, kids start to drift away from sports, and by the time they're 13, 75% of kids have drifted away from team sports. So that's one outcome. Kids just lose interest and stop playing. And the other consequence, of course, is injury. And, there's this unusual particular category of injury that the kids are susceptible to, and that's from simple overuse. They start playing sports so much that they're kind of thrust beyond their physical limitations, and they get hurt. And it's kind of counterintuitive. I mean, I'd always assumed that when parents were around to supervise, kids were safer playing sports. But it's actually quite the opposite. I mean, in the days when kids are playing on their own in free play, if their arm hurts from throwing baseballs too much, they stop. But when parents are around, they're going to push through those barriers. And that's what happened to my son. There may be fewer sports injuries these days from, unsafe field conditions. But there are many more injuries from kids just doing the same sport or activity over and over again until it hurts, you might say.
We need to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, we'll start taking your phone calls as we talk with Mark Hyman, the author of the book Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. We'd love to hear you join in this morning as well. You can tell us your story with youth sports, whether it's been a positive experience or maybe a negative one like we're talking about this morning. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 12:30, stay tuned for Chapter a Day. On Chapter a Day today, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society by Marianne Schaefer and Annie Barrows, read by Susan Sweeney and Jim Fleming. Veronica Rickert back with you. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn as we talk with Mark Hyman, the author of the book Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. We'll get right to the phones right now and take a phone call from Martha in Iowa. Hi, Martha.
Hi. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I don't want to offend your guest, Mr. Hyman, but my first comment is, and I'm speaking as a mom of a 16-year-old junior, a boy, and then my daughter's now in college, and both were involved in competitive sports. But and I'm a teacher as well, elementary teacher. And I'm just speaking... first of all, my observations are with my son. He's playing baseball, and he grew up in the baseball league that we have here in our town. But my observation is, I think there's too much testosterone making these decisions as far as being on the boards in regards to when they start playing in our town. this league that my son was playing in started playing baseball at the end of April, and the weather was horrible, okay? And they're still in school. So they're playing baseball twice a week in the evening. I told my husband and my son, and they knew it, every year, I said, I'm not going out to watch your baseball games in protest because I think it's ridiculous. You're playing baseball at this time of year. You can start playing baseball in June. I think it's ridiculous. So I never went to any of the games. And they understood that. And my son knew that I was proud of him. I was interested in what he did. But he also knew how his mother felt. And my second point is that I think a lot of these parents and moms are just as guilty of it as dads. They're living vicariously through their children. And maybe dad wasn't an athlete in high school, and dad wants his son, you know, to be that next pro baseball player or whatever sport it is. They're living vicariously through their children. And sometimes some of these coaches don't know the basics of the sport themselves, which is kind of sad. And my third comment is that I think parents need to take a step back and look at, okay, why are we having our children involved in this? And what do we want for our children? And I think, you know, starting kids at 6 years, 7 years of age is really, it's ridiculous. And I think you need to expose your children to different areas and maybe find their talents. But I just think that parents are not looking at, like your guest says, they're not looking at the point of all of this with their children. I just think it's detrimental to the child's development. And I just think, like, you know, let your children go outside and play. And that's what we did with our son. We just let him go outside. We gave him that little, you know, put the ball on top of the stand, and he played his own little imaginary baseball games in the backyard. And he was happy as a clam, or he would throw the tennis ball against the garage door. And it wasn't that we said, go out there and throw it against the garage door. He just wanted to. There were nights when I'd have to call him in because it was getting dark.
So, Martha, just getting back to the first thing you said, you think that things would be better if there were more women's voices on these sports boards?
Yeah, I do.
Well, how come?
Well, because I think women look at things, I think some women, I mean, I consider myself to be, I have a competitive side because I played some competitive sports in high school too. But you have to kind of pull yourself back. I think men look at this completely different. And I think moms, I think there are some moms out there, I hear the moms, I hear some of them say, oh, this is ridiculous, playing tournaments every Saturday. It's like, hello, then say something.
Mm-hmm.
Say something to the board. Write a letter to the board. And I know people have. And the board members say, oh, well, we tell our coaches that they're not supposed to, you know, do this and that. But they're still doing it. And I think those board members need to become more vocal.
What do you think, Mark Hyman? Martha made a lot of points there, but just to start with the one we were talking about, women on boards, would that make a difference?
Well, it's a great call, and so many good points. One thing I would say is that, you know, for a long time, the motivation for a lot of this testosterone, as Martha mentions, has been this notion that this is all leading to a college scholarship for a child. And for a long time, that's been for boys only. But now girls are very much, since Title IX, there are lots of opportunities for girls to get college scholarships too. So girls, as girls' sports are becoming more competitive, and they're more pointed toward the possibility of getting a scholarship in college. So I agree with Martha that historically this has been, you know, a father and a son problem. But there are lots of moms and dads who are interested in their girls playing on the most competitive teams and environments so that they can get college scholarships too.
Thank you for the call, Martha. And we'll take one now from Bruce in Milwaukee. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Well, thank you, Valerie, for taking my call.
Veronica,
I'm sorry.
That's
As
okay.
I listened, I became sobered because this is a true sadness. We live in a culture that's hyper-competitive for, you know, various reasons. People are highly insecure, and they want their children to live their lives for them. My nephew, sorry about the bells, my nephew burned out at baseball at a very early age because his father was so aggressive in forcing him into this. He had a natural talent for it, but it was abused. And in the end, this looks like child exploitation to me. Not only is it families using their children to have social status in a community or especially to get a scholarship, but also the idea that you're also supporting companies that make all the gear that all these kids buy every year. The parents run out and buy helmets and padding and new shoes every year, and there's this whole industry that's exploiting it, and you get these families, men in particular, but women now, that want their kids to succeed at all cost. And I think it's taking a terrible toll on the kids. I know so many kids with injuries, knee injuries, arm injuries, and also psychological injuries because they couldn't compete well enough, so they've totally turned off to team sports. Whatever happened to the concept of playing? And why are Americans so hyper-competitive? That's the underscore of your book. What is the reason for that unresolved need to be the best at all possible costs?
Mark
Hyman?
It's killing
the kids.
There are a number of issues. One is that there is a kind of social cachet that goes along with this. And I have this... great discussion about this with Lyle McKaylee, who is a pediatric sports specialist in Boston. And he said that he sees patients who come in, they've just moved to a community, and if their child is a special player in a sport, it creates a whole social network for them immediately. They're on a travel soccer team, and they're going to barbecues and picnics and so forth. So there is that social aspect to it that's important. And then there's also the college scholarship goal, which a lot of parents have. And it's a real long shot. I don't think parents really understand, for the most part, how difficult and remote the possibility of their child getting a college scholarship to play sports truly is. But, fewer than 1% of kids on college campuses are there with college scholarships. It's like buying a lottery ticket. But parents, and I include myself, are hooked on this idea that if we start our kids early enough, and if we give them lots of training and every advantage, that we can groom our kids into college athletes. And it doesn't work that way.
That's actually an interesting point that comes up in your book, that we do think that if we start them super young, that we can train them to be these great athletes. But the point is made in your book that that's not necessarily the case. For instance, you interview a pitching coach who says that he can take a kid who's 17 and he'll be pitching as well as the kid who started when he was 11 because there's no difference. So people start out their kids much earlier unnecessarily, not just in that case, but in other cases too, that you don't really need to specialize that early.
Veronica, you read the book carefully.
It was a good book. I had a hard time putting it down.
This is a man named Tommy John, who was really central to the whole reporting of the book. Tommy John was a major league pitcher for 20 years, very successful in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And in 1974, he was pitching for the Dodgers and suffered a terrible elbow injury, ruptured the ligament in his pitching elbow. And up until that point, that kind of injury was a career ender. No one ever recovered from that injury. But Tommy John just refused to accept that. And he was playing again for the Dodgers, and the team physician was a man named Frank Job, who was a very respected orthopedic surgeon. And Job came up with this plan to transplant a tendon from Tommy John's right wrist into his left elbow to repair the ligament, to take the place of the ligament. Nothing like that had ever been done before to a major league athlete. And it worked. And Tommy John recovered, and he went back to pitching and actually won more games in his career after the surgery than he had before. But it never occurred to Frank Job that this surgery would be done on anyone but an adult, and, you know, a major league pitcher, someone who made their living playing professional baseball. But what has happened over the last 15 or 20 years is that the surgery has kind of migrated down to the point where many people having the surgery are kids, high school kids and college players, including my son, who had the surgery when he was 16 years old. So it's really, I mean, it's scary what we will do, and I include myself, to keep our kids in sports. I mean, we're pushing them beyond physical limits, and then we're resorting to, you know, pretty exotic operations to put them back on the field.
See, I think there's time for another call before break. Let's go to Jenny in Madison. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I wanted to say I really appreciate this conversation. I have a son who's a speed skater, and my husband and I are not at all sport people. We never raised him to be a sport person, and we are not involved in sports ourselves in any way. And yet here we have this kid who's very competitive and didn't really start skating until he was 12 years old, which is considered by everybody to be late. So, but consequently, in 3 years, he's getting close to being able to compete in the upcoming Olympic trials, although, you know, he would be too young to make the team. So I have a few points on this. One thing is on the point of starting early. I think it's a canard to think that starting early is a benefit for the reasons that you already said, but also because, you know, if you talk about the people, especially if you're talking about an individual sport like an Olympic sport, you know, typically kids are too young to make the team, so starting them at 3 years old, thinking that at 16 or 17 they're going to be old, you know, good enough to qualify or whatever, means that, you know, you can't control when they peak, and they can't control when they peak, and so the level of risk that you take then starting them earlier is actually to no end, and a lot of kids quit before they ever reach that point because they're not old enough to really engage their own self-motivation at that point, especially in a sport like this, which requires a lot of individual pushing and motivation in order to be good at it. And that dovetails into my second point, which is when kids are started in sports very young and where it becomes an issue of the family or something that they identify their family as doing, it's very hard to tease out where the kid's motivation begins and then the beginning of the parent's motivation, especially when you add in the factors of if it's a very high-stakes thing that requires a lot of investment of money. You know, the minute parents start to spend a lot of money, that's where their sentiments get very, very engaged because, of course, it has an economic consequence to the family, which can be very large, especially I know for us, in an individual sport like this, there's no funding for it. My son's never going to get a college scholarship out of it. You know, we can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in the amount of time that it will take him to get good enough to even be competitive. So thirdly, I'd like to say that one of the solutions I think that's very important is, of course, the training of coaches is one, but I think the more important one is that parents need to get some kind of reality check, meaning some kind of advice or counsel about how to understand motivation and their own motivations and to be able to make good decisions for their kids, because sometimes kids will think that this is something that they want to continue doing when, in fact, there are a lot of signals that point to the fact that perhaps their interest is waning. And it takes a very strong parent to step in and say, you know, maybe this really isn't, you know, very few people go to the Olympics, and there's a reason for that. It's because it's a lot of sacrifice, and we may just have reached the point where, no, we're not going to keep going like this, and it's not healthy for you. And but, you know, when the parents have been so involved in it, like you have to be for a sport like this, it's very hard to step back because, of course, you don't want your child to be a quitter, and, you know, this is ingrained in all of us, don't be a quitter, don't be a quitter. But the truth is that there come several, you know, splits in the road where you have to make the decision to continue or end it. And if you're not aware of, and you're not watching for these signals where a child's interest can be waning, you know, you may continue to the detriment of yourself, your child, and your family. And again, I want to go back to something that Martha said about, you know, the importance of women's voices in this. You know, I'm a pretty aggressive, assertive person, and yet in the sports realm, I feel like my kind of voice to say, why are we playing five tournaments in a year? Why are we playing outside? Why is the coach screaming in my kid's face? You know, it takes a certain kind of a personality, which, you know, I think in general women work on a more, can work in a more background role with regard to sports. It's very hard to get up in a coach's face mm-hmm. in a sport that you know nothing about and say, this is not good and you will stop it. And so it takes a certain type of a personality and also the creation of a certain kind of environment to allow that voice to come out.
All right. Thank you, Jenny. Mark Hyman, she made a lot of points there, but something I heard coming up again and again, you know, almost that we should be counseling the parents when they go into sports.
You know, I've often thought that the boards of leagues should include parents who've been through this. You know, maybe a parent who whose kid is now out of the league but has spent 10 or 12 years, you know, going through the youth sports wars. I think I would have benefited from that a lot if when my kid was 7 or 8, I could have had a chat with a parent who'd been through all of this and could have said, look, you know what, winning the championship when your kid is 8 years old, that's not that big a deal, really. And you should not be, you know, don't put all your eggs in that basket. You know, having been through that stage and the 10, 11, 12 stage and the high school baseball stage, I have a very different perspective. And I think those voices are often lost because once your kids are out of youth sports, you tend not, you know, you drift away. You're not staying in the program. The other thing is that I think physicians should be a big part of this. I can't tell you how many times I've been in the company of, you know, sports coaches, sports tutors, you know, giving private instruction or volunteer coaches who will say things like, it's okay to start throwing a curveball at age 12 because I've been coaching for 15 years and I've never had a kid on my team who's had an arm problem as a result. Well, that's totally wrong. First of all, if the kid's going to have a problem, it's not going to be that year. I mean, it's a cumulative thing. The kid's going to have the problem 4 or 5 years later. And physicians have a very different view. I mean, they've got the data, they've got the medical research, and they will say, absolutely not. That's way too early. But, you know, we tend to rely on coaches for expertise that we shouldn't expect them to have. I want to hear from an orthopedic surgeon, you know, not the volunteer coach who, you know, works as an accountant.
So I guess that could be one way to go is to have sort of an adjunct physician on the team.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that some leagues are moving in that direction. There's more and more research available that leagues can tap into. And Little League Baseball, to its credit, is moving in this direction. They've adopted stricter rules regarding how many pitches a kid can throw in a week. So there's you know, a greater awareness that you know, we're not talking about adults. Kids have, you know, very different tolerance for some of the things that we're asking them to do than adults do. And I think that awareness is growing, but there's still a long way to go.
We need to take another quick break right now, and then we'll come back and talk more with Mark Hyman, our guest this morning, and the author of Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. The number to call this morning to be part of the program is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn this morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Most of us in Wisconsin depend on groundwater to drink. After 11 o'clock this morning, Larry Mueller learns about testing private wells for safe water. That's Larry Mueller coming up next after 11 o'clock. Veronica Rickert with you this morning on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Mark Hyman, the author of Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. And Mark Hyman, this might be outside your area of expertise, but I'll just throw in this email from Ron in Minneapolis who called and says, I have a six-year-old son. I'm wondering about gymnastics and risk of injury. He's not very social, so he's looking at individual sports. He's agile, so gymnastics would be good, but I'd like to know what risks are first. He'd like to see the possibility of having him get in touch with his body and improving coordination. So I guess if you have any thoughts about gymnastics for a six-year-old.
I guess the first thing I would say is that I'm not an authority on gymnastics for six-year-olds. There are lots of, gyms and programs for kids that age in gymnastics. I'm sure that there are, safe ways for kids that age to engage in gymnastics. I think the issue is setting limits as a parent. But in terms of just getting started in the sport as a six-year-old, I'm sure there are safe ways to do that.
And a call now from David with us from Wausau. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I'm 55. My son, who I'm going to refer to in my brief story, is now 26 and doing fine. And first of all, I want to thank the author for writing this book for myself and I'm actually a hobby writer. If I was going to write a book about something and choose a subject, this would be a great subject. Thank you for doing it for the rest of us. My son, when he was in Pony League, I think, which is where you go right after T-ball and just before Little League, I forget. I got home and my wife says, Aaron had a bad experience at baseball today. And she briefed me about what it was about, and I sat him down. And I said, "What happened?" And he said, "Well, my one of the coaches who I had worked with preseason, I worked with this team preseason myself. And these guys, all the adults, all seemed fine. Well, now we're in a game, and it's maybe the second game of the season. My son says he took his son, who was the star pitcher, and in between innings, took him over and throttled him up against the side of the car, Dad, and." Providentially, in that same game, the head coach in the dugout got frustrated and threw a glove across the dugout in front of all of these 10, 12-year-old kids.
Hmm.
And my son was emotionally traumatized by this. And what I did? I left it up to him. I said, "You know what, son? I'm going to call everybody. I'm going to tell them what your experience was. I'm going to tell them that I'm not happy with it. But if you don't want to go back, I'm going to leave that choice up to you." And here's my point. I think what we need to do is maybe put some kind of ding-dong school for parents into the first phases of getting their child into a organized group sport, team sport, and let them know that just as important as looking for indications that their child is excelling and being passionate with their involvement in it, they also need to look for signs that this isn't a good fit for their child. Because physical injury is just the tip of the iceberg as far as the injury that is possible by being a vicarious, an overzealous vicarious parent.
Mark Hyman?
Well, I'd make two points. One is, we're not talking about all, and I'm sure the caller would agree, we're not talking about all coaches and parents. There are plenty of adults who care deeply about kids and behave in exemplary ways and do the right thing 99% of the time. And I think that does need to be said because, it's very easy in a conversation like this to paint with a very broad brush. And it's not the bad parents against the good parents. I mean, good parents do things that we regret, and I'm an example of that. So I think that also needs to be said. So that's an important point. There are stories. My book is filled with stories that, can make the hair stand up on the back of your mm-hmm. neck, and some of them are worse than the ones that the caller just described. One story that really had profound effect on me was the story told to me by a man who is now in his 30s. So this goes back to the 70s. He was pitching in a little league and apparently was a very good pitcher and very valued by his coach. And he developed an arm problem. And the All-Star game came around, and the coach was very eager for him to pitch, but didn't know if he could because of the injury. The coach, between innings, brought him into the snack bar, to the concession stand at the field, and put the child's arm in the freezer to numb his arm between innings so that he could go out and pitch the next inning. So, I mean, we're all capable of some pretty amazing and disturbing things. Most parents, we want the right things for our children. We're just kind of disarmed by this culture.
Well, thank you for your call, David, and thanks for sharing your story. And I'm glad to hear your son is okay now. Email from Catherine in Minneapolis, who says, if participation for kids in sports peaks at age 11, like you referenced earlier, my concern and my observation is that the bar has been raised so high that it excludes the majority of kids who would otherwise participate in sports just for the fun or love of the game. Is it getting too exclusive, Mark Hyman?
Yeah, I think that's a big problem. It used to be that the rule was most leagues were rec leagues. They were locally, community-based leagues where kids would play until they were 13 or 14 years old. There was no travel involved. You would go to the, community field, and all the kids in the neighborhood would play on teams at that field. Now a very different kind of model is emerging. Rec leagues end at 11 or 12, the less competitive kinds of leagues that we refer to as rec leagues. And at that stage, kids, the more talented kids, continue, and they play on travel teams and elite teams. And these are kind of all-star teams. So in your neighborhood, there might be one team, and you would travel, your kids would travel 10 or 15 miles and play other teams in the community. So it's more competitive, and the more athletic kids are getting this opportunity to play. But the kid who just wants to play on a rec league level really doesn't have many options once he hits 11 or 12, because those leagues are going away. And I think part of the reason for that is that the adults who are most interested in serving as coaches and as league commissioners and being involved, their children are the more competitive children. And the children of the parents of the children who are less competitive, they're not making their voices heard, and they're not staying involved in these leagues, so they're kind of going away.
Thank you for that email, Catherine. And time for a phone call from George in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, George.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a WIAA football official, and so in Rapids and that, there's a bunch of us that help out on Saturday mornings and officiate Pop Warner football. And they start in third and fourth grade. We kind of kiddingly call them helmets with feet. And the kids are out there to have fun. They're out. A lot of them are out there because their buddies are out there, and so on. And obviously, our number one job is to keep the kids safe out there. But yet, we see from the center of the field, looking towards the sidelines, coaches who. You got to wonder in the back of their mind what they're thinking. The kids are out there to have fun, and in their mind, they're Barry Alvarez. And there's an awful lot of pressure on these kids to perform. They run offenses. Coaches told us, well, we got to get all our offense in. And we're saying, guys, the center is having trouble getting it back to the quarterback. It doesn't really make a lot of difference how tricky your offense is. And these kids play 12-minute quarters. Now, these are third and fourth graders. They're babies. And they're playing the same length of quarter that 16 and 17 and 18-year-olds are playing on Friday night. And when we get into the third quarter, you start seeing it, particularly on a fairly warm day. You're seeing that the kids are sluggish, they're getting hurt, and it's something that they need to step back and take a look and say, maybe what are we really doing here? And we see it from a firsthand basis,
George,
standing on the field with them.
George, I'm just going to jump in so our guest has time to respond since we're almost out of time. Mark Hyman?
It's a great point. You know, why are we there? And what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to replicate what we see on ESPN? Or are we trying to give kids a good experience? And it's a question that I think we have to continue to ask ourselves, because it's very, very easy to lose sight of why we're there and what we're trying to accomplish for our kids.
Mark Hyman, it's been great to talk with you. I really enjoyed your book, and I wish you well with it.
Thank you.
Mark Hyman, our guest this morning, he is the author of the book, Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. If you'd like a copy of today's program, you can call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. Ask for program 325E. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Sarah Carroll for answering your phone calls this morning as well. I'm Veronica Rickert, thanking you for listening on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.